Greg Masters at the Health 2.0 10th annual gathering here in Santa Clara County. And I have a colleague, friend, and inspiration here with me today. Her name is Casey Quinlan. She's known on Twitter as at Mighty Casey, formerly known as Mighty Mouth Productions.
Well, no. I self-branded as the Mighty Mouth because if you can't hide it, hang a flag on it. And my company is Mighty Casey Media, but it's just at Mighty, you know, MightyCasey.com on the web.
I stand corrected. So here's the deal. So 10th annual Health2Con conference. I see Casey at many conferences, often which blend together. And this is Casey's first opportunity to be at the Health2Con conference. So let's get some of your impressions and maybe key takeaways of what it's been like to be here over the last 3 days.
Well, you know, there's a few things. First of all, I think that this particular conference is refreshing to me because it's very honest about what it is. This is a technology conference. It is not a, kumbaya, trying to be something that it isn't. You know, it's not aimed at any one vertical in healthcare, but it is totally about tech. And that's refreshing because often either it's weighted heavily toward government or it's weighted heavily toward a health system that is sponsoring it. And I think that it's just refreshing to be in a place where you know exactly what's going on and exactly what the agenda is. Now, that said, I call on the developer and tech community to stop doing the healthcare thing, which is thinking that patients are dumb pieces of meat and that we are not smart enough to know what we need. What we need is for people to help us, not for people to try to sell us things. Granted, yes, people need to buy things, but when was the last time you bought something from someone who called you stupid while they did it? Think on that. So know that patients are smarter than you think they are. Meet us where we are. Meet us on a level, and all sorts of amazing things could happen. But, you know, my takeaway from Health2Con is that it was refreshing to be in one place that had one mission, and I knew what it was. And I also saw some really cool stuff here. So this was a good few days.
So you're here as a patient advocate. Tell us a little bit about, first, A, your background as to why you're into advocacy, and then put that lens on what you saw here over the last several days.
Well, it started, my parents were e-patients, which sounds a little weird because they were the World War II generation, but there's a whole story behind that that I won't tell here. But I was a family caregiver. When they got to a point where they needed help, I stepped in. And then after they died, I guess 5 years after they died, I got a cancer diagnosis. And I felt as though the universe was handing me a message. You're supposed to pivot into healthcare. As previously, I had been in the television, you know, network television news business. And I had covered my share of medical stories, among other things. On the TV news beat, network, as a producer. If you saw me on camera, it meant everyone else was hit by a meteor. But, I did that and then ended up slowly and then more rapidly pivoting into healthcare, bringing the skills that I have at storytelling into trying to draw attention to the fact that patients know more about where the gaps are in healthcare than the system itself does and could usefully deploy us to close those gaps. But I produce content for medical societies still, wearing sort of a semi-journalist hat. So I get a 360. You know, I talk to a lot of really smart people from a lot of different points of the healthcare compass. So I don't just come running out of the patient row screaming and carrying a torch. I'm not necessarily just an angry villager, but I can play one on TV.
So you've... In the early goings of my awareness of you, you wrote a book, and it has something to do with Christmas.
Oh, yes. I wrote a book called Cancer for Christmas because I got my cancer diagnosis a couple days before Christmas in 07, and when the universe hands you a book title like that, you got to use it. And so I wrote the book. I blogged and journaled and, et cetera, through treatment, which was in 08. And then at the end of 08, I finished the book and handed it over to some very smart friends who are professional editors, and then brought the book itself out in late September of 09 and got it to bestseller on Amazon in October of 09. So I can authentically say and legitimately say that it's an Amazon bestseller. And it's still out there, cancerforchristmas.com, or just go to Amazon and plug in Cancer for Christmas.
So let's talk about, this is the 10th year of what is arguably the granddaddy of the health, Web 2.0, digital health, mHealth, patient empowerment movement here that brings a lot of developers and entrepreneurs and venture capitalists, policy people, government, private sector together. What's your sense of what it was like to be here? What's the primary vibe you picked up?
Well, I referenced it earlier, but I'll restate it. You said that this is the granddaddy of many things, all true, except for when you got to patient empowerment. I think that this, to be fair, Matt and the Health 2.0 team have always welcomed patients. They give patients, if you apply, if you, you know, through their engine online, once the registration engine is open, if you're a patient, you can apply for a scholarship. It's a very simple process. This was the first year I did that. I could have done it in previous years, but typically they, the Health2Con was around a time that I was traveling for something else, so I couldn't really mesh it with my schedule. This year, it was a given. And then also they were doing those 10-year awards, and I found out that I was in the running, and I thought that was fun. So then it turned out I was a finalist and found out that, you know, God bless the Gordon and Betty Moore Foundation and all who sail in her, because I'm getting the money back on my airfare and my my Airbnb. So I'm happy. This was a terrific experience. I will come back. I'm not sure if I'll make it next year. I'm certainly going to try. But, I definitely think it was worth it. And I saw some things here, particularly around blockchain, that I think have huge opportunity, both in the patient and you know, empowerment side. And I mean, because patients are already empowered, but the system doesn't really see us yet. But I think that the blockchain thing that I saw here, particularly with DocChain and PocketDoc, that stuff, I think, has real potential. And then also there was some precision medicine stuff that I saw that, really kind of, lit up my panel. So
when I say patient empowerment or more engagement with patients, patient advocates, the patient voice, what comes to mind for you?
Well, what comes to mind for me is everybody's been talking about, patient-centered care and, patient engagement. And the real issue, the bedrock issue for me with that is that I think that too often the healthcare system sees patient engagement as a box check because it's been made a box check for a variety of reasons, from payers, et cetera. But patients are already engaged. Granted, there are some chronically ill people who deal with issues that complicate and, comorbidities of depression along with, serious diabetes that's uncontrolled and, let's say, COPD. That's a cocktail that who would want? And at that point, you really would kind of go like, what? And there's a lot of social determinants of health that aren't being addressed. And I think that that's something that our healthcare system and our system, our society in general, American society, really needs to look at. It's like, how much do we value human life if we're willing to let so much of it sort of fall by the wayside over inability to access the healthcare system because either the system doesn't make itself available via insurance and that kind of access, or we don't teach children from the earliest age how to interact with the healthcare system in a way that they get their needs met and they can live the happiest, healthiest, fullest life. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That's what it's supposed to be about, right?
Got it. So, but where I was going is, where do you have a gathering of providers, payers, government, VCs, you name it? What conference, what venue, what platform, where do you see that where the patient's voice is really being hosted, nurtured, and amplified?
Other than here, and I mean, granted, there could have been a little bit more equal time, but you can't get everything. MedX purports to be. They try to be. They've had some hits and misses. There is, some effort on the part of ASCO, the American Society of Clinical Oncology, to include patients in many things, including, paper authorship and paper presentation at their annual meeting. I think around the edges, the industry is starting to recognize again that patients are. But as far as which conferences, I think Health2Con, to a degree MedX, Health Data Palooza. Although this is the second year that Academy Health is going to be running it, next year is the second year Academy Health is going to be running it, and I don't know that they have really reconstituted the consumer circle yet. Stay tuned. But then, there's grassroots stuff like Regina Holliday's Cinderblock series, which happens, it's happened four times. There have been three. And one this year and one last year. And I think that she's got another one this coming year in the beautiful mountains of Western Maryland. But that's, there really isn't a lot yet. But I think that Health2Con, I think, can take, sort of a tip of the spear prize here, because they have been welcoming patients for a very long time, before MedX even existed.
So would it be fair to say the, quote, patient's voice, unquote, has yet to find a home?
Well, it's yet to find the microphone, or to an amplifier to plug the microphone into. Not as though, here does it, and Health Data Palooza to a degree, but I think that there hasn't really been a concerted effort to have a patient contingent design and deliver patient material, patient programming in a conference of this level, other than MedX. I know that MedX does do that. But I think that, Health2Con has, because it's a tech conference, I think that one of the things that patients have to do is, patients as a community, is figure out ways to create some content and some programming where they could present it to the Health2Con event planning group, and say, hey, this is a session we'd like to do. And then that way we would start. Because if we don't ask to be invited. Push your way on stage if you have to. It's better to ask, but the best way to ask is to deliver some programming that will put butts in seats.
So there's probably certain personality types here. Those who have what's been called this internal external locus of control. There might be this sense of I want to be more activist in my health. I'm drawn to situations that create health literacy and empowerment, and I get fed and nurtured. But there's a whole other cohort out there who just says, just tell me what to do. How do we differentiate between the two?
Well, the just tell me what to do crowd is not going to show up at Health2Con. But as far as just in general in life and helping people live their highest and, the highest and best purpose, be it, as a father or a mother or, a worker or whatever, or a presenter at Health2Con, I think that people need to recognize their own agency and their own responsibility in their health to a degree. Now, granted, if some drunk sideswipes your car, that wasn't your fault. But know your, this is something I tell patient communities all the time, know your risks. Know your family history, and be honest with yourself about what you're doing to either get healthy, stay healthy, be healthy, whatever. And if you get a thing, work as a team member with your medical team. Don't just be a lump of protoplasm going by in a conveyor belt, because that's not always the best methodology toward getting to best health.
So in your sphere of first contact, friends, relationships, and so forth, how would you allocate those who want to be in a shared decision-making relationship with their healthcare provider versus those who would rather just follow directions?
Well, that's, I think, a personality thing. I personally think that we really need to teach kids, starting in K-12, about how to be self-activating. In this setting, it's the same thing you do. Would you just like hand a bank all your money and say do what you want? Because if you do that with healthcare, if you approach healthcare like, you know, some idiot with a paycheck who, you know, I'm going to deposit this and then you do whatever you want with it. Just tell me what to do. That's not really a great design for living. Now, yeah, I mean, granted, there is some literacy uptake that would have to happen with people. And that's why I, you know, return again to the K through 12. We're starting to teach financial literacy in K through 12 in the more forward thinking education systems. And I think that we should do the same thing with health literacy. And I've written about this. And,
well, but how about in the current cohort of, let's say, people, the boomers or the millennials? What, I know this is subjective, but what would you say is the allocation of people who want to be engaged in a shared decision-making context versus someone who just maybe needs some information but wants to defer to the guidance of healthcare professionals?
Well, there's probably a scale there because, you know, shared decision-making is, I mean, it's not a totally new concept, but it's one that patients aren't usually really aware of. And I think it's incumbent on the, at that point, the provider community to figure out how to introduce that concept to their patient panels and then, you know, help the patient understand, like, okay, how involved do you want to be? And there are some simple, you know, sort of yes, no questions, you know, little dashboard stuff that I've seen developed that, you know, would help providers. Like, you know, how engaged do you want to be? How much information do you want? You know, how much time do you want to take to, you know, how do you want a second opinion? Or do you, you know, do you want to just have me tell you what to do? But with the understanding that I'm going to tell you why. Providers always need to give you the why. And then also you need to understand what kind of outcomes are possible, what side effects, et cetera. I mean, just having someone tell you what to do doesn't really get you all the way home if there are risks to the treatments or the lack of treatments and things that you need to watch out for, which means you have to at least participate to some degree in the decision. You cannot just be a lump of protoplasm.
So if you were king of the kingdom or queen,
or
queen of the queendom, what would be the first three things you would do in order to make this arguably dysfunctional healthcare ecosystem a little more effective and patient friendly?
First thing I would do is end employer-sponsored insurance, because access is key. And the reason that our access engine is so geschnurrt, technical term, in the United States is because we have this very wacky system where you have to have insurance to get health care. But, you know, right around half of the people who are, you know, working adults, half of working adults have employer-sponsored insurance. The other half of working adults do not. Now, they're either shopping on the exchange or they're very low wage and depending, you know, they could end up on Medicaid, depending on what state they live in, et cetera. I really think that a model like the one in Holland, the one in Germany, the one in Switzerland, just to name three, that are insurance-based, not single-payer, because I know that makes people go crazy in the United States if you say single-payer. But I think that in order to have, we need to have universal access, and we need to end employer-sponsored insurance, and that will help us start to chip away at this. The other piece is we really have to take healthcare to task on a right care approach, as opposed to a, you know, dollars for procedures thing, because $3 trillion a year is a little unsustainable, I find. Don't you? And they think that, wiser minds than I think that at least a third of that is waste. So what could we do with $1 trillion? Oh, I don't know. Think about it. We could build roads, schools. We could have a party. We could do anything. But why are we giving it to healthcare if it's not working? If it's not working, why are we paying for it? $3 trillion? Woo. And then we could get $1 trillion back? Let's do it. So end ESI, and that'll help us get a handle on the $3 trillion thing. If we also put it with a right care approach.
Well, let me stop you. So what's the alternative? Government funded?
You mean single payer?
Single payer, or at least universal care created via some combination of public-private sponsorship.
Well, I don't know if that's a gunfight in the public square you really want to have. I mean, if you look at the blood in the streets after getting the ACA passed, and the ACA, let me tell you, is so not perfect. But it was a start. I really think the bedrock problem with this and why it was so difficult is that employer-sponsored insurance pollutes the market in a way that both employers and the insurers are minting coin off of this that they should not be. The employers should not be in the healthcare system. People should be in charge of making those decisions. They should be helped to have the knowledge to make those decisions. And products that are understandable to them need to be delivered, but we have to start creating that. Continuing with the status quo will just guarantee that we have the biggest mess in the universe, which we already have. And so do we want to keep the biggest mess in the universe, or do we want to make it better?
So are you arguing for vouchers?
Well, you need to put that in a little more context for me.
Like block grants to the states, sort of lump sums, which you then empower you to go out and purchase in the open market?
Why is the state even involved? Why are consumers not buying their own insurance?
Well, it could come from the employer. It could come from
why is the employer in the game at all? Why? I mean, I don't see why they should be. Why don't they pay people enough to just go out and buy bloody insurance?
So if the employer's not the funding conduit, then the only other alternative is tax-supported. So what's the source?
The employer shouldn't be paying the bill. There are ways, and again, I've written about this, and I could go wonky here, but there are ways in which employers can be involved in just the, sort of payroll deduction and then shift over into a health plan. But the employer should not be running the health plan, selecting the health plan, et cetera. I mean, if you are employed you can either do it out of your bank account. But I think that we need to give people more agency. Obviously, if they elect to have their employer siphon the funds and send it over to, XYZ insurance for their health care, fine. But that should not, the selection of that plan and the running of that plan should not be up to the employer. It should be up to the individual. And yes, you're going to have to pay for it, but, there are ways to do that. So, the federal marketplace, healthcare.gov, is doing an okay job of that right now. It's not perfect, but it's a start. And I think that if everybody had to shop on the marketplace, and if employers were to be involved, it would only be to the degree that a level of payroll deduction per pay period would then go to whoever the administrator was of, we're paying the premiums for Mrs. McGillicuddy now. It's not that hard.
Sounds like health savings accounts. Okay, what's number two? So, and employer-sponsored health insurance. You're running the zoo. What's next?
Oh, the K-12 syllabus on health literacy, so that we can start, training baby humans how to understand how their bodies work and how to interact with the healthcare system, how to talk to a doctor, how to get the help they need, and then, how to manage things that occur.
Okay, how about number three? Is there a three?
No, I think that's one and two. I mean, I think I can do it in two.
Okay, excellent. Okay, Casey, so final takeaways, general impression here. When you go home, what's going to be top of mind for you?
Well, what's going to be top of mind for me is the blockchain thing and the precision medicine stuff that I saw here. That's what I'm going to continue to keep an eye on and continue to write about and track. But I've made some good friends. I saw some, longtime friends. Hello. While I was here. So, new relationships, solidifying old relationships, and continuing the work, because the system will not shift itself. And it was not broken. It was built this way. And we must work together or we are doomed.
Thank you for that. Well, there you have it. That'll be the last word. Thank you, Casey Quinlan, at Mighty Casey on Twitter, for spending some time here. And maybe we'll see you next year.
I hope so.